Open your Bibles, please, for our second reading to 2 Chronicles chapter 4. Second Chronicles chapter 4, verse 1, hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired word of God. Moreover, he made an altar of brass, 20 cubits the length thereof, and 20 cubits the breadth thereof, and 10 cubits the height thereof. Also, he made a molten sea of 10 cubits from brim to brim, round in compass, and 5 cubits the height thereof, and a line of 30 cubits did compass it round about. And under it was the similitude of oxen, which did compass it round about 10 in a cubit, compassing the sea round about. 2 rows of oxen were cast when it was cast. It stood upon 12 oxen, 3 looking toward the north, and 3 looking toward the west, and 3 looking toward the south, and 3 looking toward the east. And the sea was set above upon them, and all their hinder parts were inward. And the thickness of it was an handbreadth, and the brim of it like the work of the brim of a cup, with flowers of lilies, and it received and held 3,000 baths. He made also 10 lavers, and put 5 on the right hand, and 5 on the left to wash in them. Such things as they offered for the burnt offering, they washed in them. But the sea was for the priests to wash in. And he made 10 candlesticks of gold according to their form, and set them in the temple, 5 on the right hand and 5 on the left. He made also 10 tables, and placed them in the temple, 5 on the right side and 5 on the left. And he made 100 basins of gold. Furthermore, he made the court of the priests and the great court and the doors for the court and overlaid the doors of them with brass. And he set the sea on the right side of the east end over against the south. And Huram made the pots and the shovels and the basins. And Huram finished the work that he was about to make for King, that he was to make for King Solomon for the house of God, to wit, the 2 pillars and the pommels and the chapiters, which were on the top of the 2 pillars, and the 2 wreaths to cover the 2 pommels of the chapiters, which were on the top of the pillars. And 400 pomegranates on the 2 wreaths, 2 rows of pomegranates on each wreath to cover the 2 pommels of the chapiters, which were upon the pillars. He made also bases and lavers, made he upon the bases, 1 sea and 12 oxen under it, the pots also, and the shovels, and the flesh hooks, and all their instruments did Huram his father make to King Solomon for the house of the Lord of bright brass. In the plain of Jordan did the king cast them in the clay ground between Sukkot and Zeredatha. Thus Solomon made all these vessels in great abundance, for the weight of the brass could not be found out. And Solomon made all the vessels that were for the house of God, the golden altar also, and the tables whereon the showbread was set. Moreover, the candlesticks with their lamps, that they should burn after the manner before the oracle of pure gold. And the flowers and the lamps and the tongs made he of gold, and that perfect gold. And the snuffers and the basins and the spoons and the censers of pure gold, and the entry of the house, the inner doors thereof for the most holy place, and the doors of the house of the temple were of gold. May God add his blessing to the reading and hearing of his most holy word. So we have seen this before, although there is greater detail in, 1 Kings chapter 7, there's greater detail there. This is Ezra's recounting of that. It's a very interesting thing to think about, right? So Solomon builds the temple in about what year? Does anybody know off the top of your head? Do you remember? 950 or so BC, 950. And here, this is being described now by Ezra. And this is 450 years later. Now, I don't know about you, but if you take a look at literature that's describing the same event from 450 years of perspective difference, you're not going to have the same kind of agreement that you have here. Right? Of course, it might be said, well, Ezra just copied First Kings. Well, he might have, or he might have been inspired. But I will tell you this, that there are a couple of discrepancies. And this is one of those instances where the discrepancies actually speak to the inspiration of it, rather than a lack of inspiration. The critics of the Bible will say, well, take a look at how many baths were in the Great Sea, the Molten Sea. Because in 1 Kings chapter 7, it says there were 2,000 baths. Here it says there were 3,000. Oh, there must be a mistake in the Bible. Well, it tells me two things here. And you can read all kinds of different discussions on this, and there are some more believing, some less believing. Many scholars will simply say, well, you know, numbers, they're kind of tough in Hebrew. You know, this is probably a scribal error. Well, scribal errors and jot and tittles being preserved don't get along very well, do they? They don't. Or it might just be that Ezra was working from memory under the inspiration of the Spirit of God, and the Spirit of God entered in this 3,000 as an exaggerative figure so that we would know that this molten sea that we're talking about here is something grand. 3,000 baths. Anybody know how many gallons is in a bath according to this ancient Hebrew measurement? Almost 7 gallons. So you're looking at something that held somewhere between 15,000 and 20,000 gallons of liquid. It's a swimming pool made of brass mounted upon 12 oxen. And if the Spirit of God said to Ezra, write 3,000 here, it was for the purpose of telling us how very large it was, and the difference between 1 Kings 7 and here is that they're both inspired, because if Ezra was copying, he simply would have written 2,000. That's my opinion. Other scholars will tell you different. They'll tell you that this is a scribal error. Others will say, well, we don't really know. Some will say it's pleonastic. Pleonastic means it's just a number of fullness that's kind of, you know, put out there. I like that. That helps us to understand. You know, it's a pleonasm. It's relating it in a fullness. Because the ancient Near Eastern standards of numbers and keeping accurate records are different than ours. And so 3,000 and 2,000 might actually be two sides of a simple coin, teaching us that the thing was huge. So it was 5 cubits deep, 10 cubits across. Using the smallest measurement that we have for a cubit, that would mean it was 14 feet across and 7 feet deep. Using the royal cubit, which is more like 20 inches instead, it was closer to 18 feet across and 9 feet deep. We're not told here, because it sat upon those 12 oxen, we don't read of a platform or a decking around it where the priests went up to dip out of it. We're not told. We're not told here or in 1 Kings chapter 7 whether it was built like that or whether it had little spigots at the bottom. We don't know. We simply don't know. And whether you walked up to it, opened up the spigot, and washed like this. Don't know. But it was made for the priests to wash in, because they needed to be clean to do their labors. And so much water and so many priests being serviced by this bath tells us what? Well, it points ahead to the washing of Christ, that it is full and it is complete and that it has more than what we need. And then there were lavers, 10 of them, 5 on either side. And those were set there for the washing of the particular sacrifices that needed to be washed. If you read, understanding what Moses wrote to them with regard to the butchery work of the of the tabernacle and temple, what you'll find is that there was much washing that also had to take place. But notice there's washing of the sacrifices, and then there's the washing for the priests, and they're kept separate. And the only time those two things come together is when the blood of a sacrifice would be sprinkled upon the garments of the priest. Again, pointing to Christ. There's this statement about oxen that may confuse some of you. There were two rows of oxen, 10 oxen to a cubit. That is, that there was an ornate casting in the molten sea that just below the rim, going all the way around, all 30 cubits round, there were little oxen faces all the way around in two rows, 10 to a cubit. And it was 30 cubits around, so there were 300 of those little castings that were made. So we note the ornateness of this. And then in the lip of it, or in the rim of it, there were pomegranates and flowers. All to speak of those fresh things. Oxen speaks of strength, right, for work. And so we learn from all of these artifacts thematically that this work of the priest, it was a refreshing work. It was where the Lord sort of symbolized his being refreshed with the people, as we think of pomegranates and flowers. But it was also a manly work. It was a hard work. It was a strong work, typified by oxen. Notice the thickness of this. It was a handbreadth thick. I'm just thinking of, you know, the ancient world. I'm thinking of construction problems today and cranes and lifting things. Think about, in the ancient world, something that is 17, 18 feet across, 7, 8, 9, 10 feet, 9 feet deep, all brass, a handbreadth thick, being lifted up to set on 12 oxen figures that are its base. Let me tell you something. You wouldn't have had to anchor it. Its weight was enough. And then they filled it with water. Wow. So this was no mean act that Saul did. It was not a Solomon. It wasn't a little thing. This is a huge undertaking. This is, as David would say, this is wonderful, magnificent. This house that is being built here. So then there were candlesticks according to the form, and that word according to the form, very important, right? This is the chronicler's statement that Moses will say over and again after the pattern revealed in the mount, according to the form. We don't get to make it up and make it more pretty to our eyes, in other words. It's according to the pattern. Then we have the 10 tables, and then the court, and then the arrangement of it all, and then we have how it was made, the bases and the lavers, and they dug out the clay in a particular place where the clay was good for casting, and they set up their heating pots, their iron pots, and they heated up those softer metals in the iron, and they poured them out in the molds that they had dug out. And so every little oxen was, with a little hand tool, was carved out just right in that clay, so that when the brass filled it up, that little oxen face was there, 10 of them per cubit. Isn't that amazing? What kind of artisanship and workmanship are we talking about here? All right, so then we have the vessels. We have the candlesticks. We have the candlesticks that burn before the oracle. The flowers, the lamps, the tongs that were made by gold. All of the artifacts, all of the necessary instruments to offer the sacrifice, to do the flaying, to collect the blood, to do all of the work of the temple. It was all done by Solomon. And notice in chapter 5, verse 1, it is all finished by the time we get to the end of chapter 4. And so gold for gold, silver for silver, brass for brass, in everything where it ought to be according to the pattern. And each one of these artifacts, should we preach through this passage sometime, we would endeavor to show how they pointed ahead, to Christ and a picture of his ministry. Let us just say it here as the apostle says it in Hebrews chapters 9 and 10, that this is a pattern of the things that are in the heavens, which is why it had to be just so. It had to represent the reality of what Christ was to do. And once we begin to enter into that with our own opinion and our own artisanship and our own smarts, our own mental prowess, well, it may be something that is pleasing to the human eye, but it no longer corresponds to the pattern. And if it doesn't correspond to the pattern, it's not able to do what it ought to represent the truth. And that's why it's so ornate. It's why it's so particular. It's why Solomon, as we say, is a type of Christ. He is that son of David that will build the house of the Lord. As we will see this afternoon, Lord willing, that greater son comes and he will say what? I will build my church. I am the builder of it. So although it was Solomon that built even this, we remember that Solomon must give up his title to Christ, and that even this expression of the church on earth in that day was built at the behest of Christ. That he wanted every pin and every bowl and every particular metal in each particular place, down to the dimensions of the size of the seas, the oxen, the little faces of the oxen, the knops and the flowers, all of it represented, are you ready? Something to him. And that was the perspective by which it was built. So in closing, I'll take you all the way back to when Moses first puts the tabernacle into its service, when he receives the pattern of it. And we'll note, won't we, when he receives the pattern of it, where does it begin? It begins in the Holy of Holies. It doesn't begin outside. We would begin outside. That's where we would begin, because that's our perspective. But as the description comes forth in those chapters in Exodus, in the 30s, we will see that the pattern that Moses receives begins from God's eyes outward, from where the Lord would place his presence, from the Holy of Holies, from the Ark of the Covenant, through the veil, into the second chamber, out of that chamber into the court, moving out toward the gate. That's how it moves. Why? Because worship, when it's thought of rightly, is thought of from the Lord's perspective and not ours. With that then, let's stand and call upon the Lord.